Welcome to Thinking Out Loud, the podcast that puts you inside conversations with the most deeply passionate, intensely dedicated, and yes, the most thoughtful people in our industry. So sit back and stay tuned. They may just change the way you think.
Hello, I'm Vicki Lins, President and CEO of CTAM, a marketing organization focused on the media, entertainment, and technology industry. And today I'm talking with Nancy Daniels, Chief Brand Officer for Discovery and Factual. Nancy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So it's a little different. We're doing this during the quarantine, and we're only meeting virtually instead of face-to-face, which is unfortunate. I'll look forward to meeting you in person sometime in the near future. But thanks so much for Zooming in with us.
Of course. Well, there is some benefits. I get to do this with my dog sitting next to me and in the comfort of my home. So it's been a matter of embracing the new normal of working lately, right?
I think all of our dogs are going to go into deep depression when we go back to work in the real world. They're so used to having us home all the time. You
know? I know. I might have to take him with me.
Well, Animal Planet, you have special rights, I'm sure.
That's right. I'll have to use that.
Exactly. Before we dive into everything, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, just to put some context around your background and our conversation for our listeners?
Sure. So I have been at Discovery as a company for almost 13 years. I've served in many roles since I joined the company back in 2007. So I started first on TLC doing production and development. I eventually got pulled over to Discovery Channel, the mothership, to do production and development. I got pulled back to TLC to be the general manager. And then most recently, they brought me back over to Discovery and had me oversee the, I'm using air quotes, factual networks, which includes Discovery, Science, and they most recently added Animal Planet, which you alluded to. So those are the three under my purview.
It's always nice when people say, I can hardly believe I've been there 13 years. It's a reflection of the fact that you love what you do, I think, when time passes so quickly.
I would agree with that. And yes, I've worked for the same company for 13 years, but you know, as you can tell by the route I've taken, I've had many different jobs and worked on different brands, and it's really kept it fresh and exciting and always being faced with new challenges. And I think that's what anybody really wants from their career.
That's terrific. Your title is actually a bit misleading because you're Chief Brand Officer. And although brand certainly plays a critical role in the success of the parts of the business that you're responsible for, you also oversee day-to-day operations, and your background is really in the creative development production space. So tell us a little bit about your role. How do you spend your time? What are your days like right now in your current role?
Yeah, and I do think the title is is a hard one to wrangle your head around. And really, it was a result of when we gained Scripps and we kind of divided the worlds, so to speak, into lifestyle brands and factual brands. Kathleen Finch came from Scripps and had been a chief lifestyle brands officer. So really, it was about kind of creating that title over the factual brands. But I have found, and you might appreciate this, that it's made me end up on a lot of CMO or marketing chains. People assume I am a chief marketing officer, which really isn't the case. I really do oversee all of those networks and their day-to-day operations, focusing on the big picture stuff of network strategy. Where are we going? Down to the, what are the shows we're greenlighting, getting them through the development process onto the air. And then everything that goes with that, you know, marketing, digital, social, press, everything that goes into supporting those shows and supporting the network falls under me. And my day-to-day, to answer that question, is always different. You know, there's always different fires that are coming up that you have to deal with. And then there's just the long-term strategy planning that you really have to focus on. So I'll just say over the last week, I've had meetings ranging from Shark Week. What are our big creative shows? What are our marketing ideas? how are we going to do a marketing shoot in the time of COVID around this, to what are some of the bigger picture shows we should be picking up for a year from now, and how are we prepping those, and how are we going to be able to shoot those, to what's our TikTok strategy? You know, what are we doing with TikTok, and what kind of videos are we putting up there? Where, how are we seeing engagement on that app? We think it's an important part of growing our brand for the long term, is having a strong and relevant presence across all social platforms. And so we're constantly talking about that, but that's kind of the, just the range of the types of things we're working on here.
So you mentioned network strategy. And when we first started talking, I said, you know, here we are still in the midst of COVID-19, still all working from home. Life as we've known it is on pause. Production as you've known it has been on pause. So talk to us a little bit about what your strategy looked like before the pandemic hit and how the pandemic has impacted the way you're viewing your strategy.
Well, before the pandemic, it was a bit of business as usual, which I think we are all in the cable industry dealing with a changing media landscape. And how are we addressing that? How are we reacting to a streaming world, a cable world, and what are the long-term things we're doing to get ahead of that? So that was obviously happening prior to COVID. And then just, okay, what are the shows we have in 3Q, in 4Q? What are the new shows we could have on for 1Q or 2Q of next year? Now, as soon as the pandemic hit and we all were kind of shell-shocked and went home and started working from home and really trying to understand what it would mean, we immediately went into triage mode. What are the shows that are delivered, are on the shelf and ready to go? What are the things that really just have a post-process to finish out that we feel pretty confident that they'll make it onto the air? What are the things that are at risk that we have to stop down production, that are no longer going to make air? And then what can we do to get fresh content for the air in the big time of unknowns? And that has meant everything from what can we shoot at home or what can we shoot in a totally different way? I think one or two examples of that are, we quickly did a after show to Deadliest Catch called After the Catch with Mike Rowe hosting it, because he does the VO on all of the Deadliest Catch episodes, knows that show, knows those captains. And we did it, you know, via Zoom and had a whole talk show, which you can light up and have on the air in a week. We've also been working with Josh Gates, who hosts a show called Expedition Unknown. And Josh is known for traveling the world and solving or attempting to solve, you know, world's mysteries. And that is just not on the table right now. We started by talking to him about doing a 10-minute after show just to talk about what had been on that night. We loved it so much. We expanded it eventually to an hour. And now we've had many weeks of that. And the show is fantastic. And Josh is fantastic in this new role, or he's barely leaving his backyard. And that has been a revelation as well. Now, we are entering a new phase of COVID. Right now, as we speak, we're late June, and things are opening back up in different states at different levels. And we've had some time to think about what we can get back into production on, what are appropriate protocols to have in place, how are we protecting everybody involved, and also getting everybody back to work, which everybody wants to do as well. And we've kind of slowly and carefully been starting things up, the things that can be done with a small crew, that can be done in a remote location where you can make sure that you have the proper protocols in place. Those are the kinds of things we've been starting with. And we're just really, every day, every week is a new majority of decisions you have to make about that kind of future and where you want to go next. It's been crazy. And also, you really bond with your team during these times when you have to figure all this out. This is big stuff. And we're all going through it together.
At CTAM, we have seen some research that notes how especially younger audiences, but even across the board, viewers are really embracing and have an authentic love for the new authentic programming they're seeing, whether it's a late night host zooming from his home or some of the examples you gave us with Josh working out of his backyard instead of some remote location around the world. Do you see some of this sticking moving forward? Do you see a different type of production gaining traction as a result of the pandemic?
Yes, I have challenged my team to just think about what have we learned about how we're doing our jobs and how we're getting content that we're going to take with us moving forward. And what you pointed out, I agree with, and I feel the same way. I think I've enjoyed seeing Jimmy Fallon in his home with his kids and his wife trying to pull a show off. And it also shows off people's true, real talent. And that's what I think viewers are reacting to. That's what I see with Josh Gates. That guy is talented and entertaining and fun to watch, whether he's digging for treasure in Egypt or in his backyard, you know, playing some sort of axe throwing game. He's entertaining to watch. So I think it's just going to make us really, truly question how we're doing everything moving forward. Everything.
So, you know, you mentioned this changing media landscape when you were talking about pre-COVID strategy. And, you know, we were dealing with a lot of change in the industry anyway. But one of the big trends and shifts happening is obviously with a lot of consumers doing much more streaming and integrating streaming into their media consumption. And then, of course, there's the whole multi-platform world. And you also referenced TikTok earlier. Talk to us a little bit about your thoughts and insights in that space, in this changing landscape where people are consuming media differently, they're consuming it on different screens in different ways. And how do you keep your brands relevant and plan for what's next as those changes continue to happen?
Well, I love this question because it's something I think about a lot. You know, Discovery is an amazing brand. Like, it means something. And, you know, people have tremendous affinity for the brand. But if you get younger, the kids who haven't grown up watching Planet Earth on Discovery or watching cable at all, you have to make Discovery meaningful and relevant to them where they are going. And so that means us having a TikTok strategy. That means us having an Instagram strategy. That means us working with some really well-known YouTubers whose kind of worlds and interests intersect with the ethos of Discovery. So an example of that is we've been working with Mark Rober. And if you know who he is, he's a pretty well-known YouTuber. So last Shark Week, we did an episode of his YouTube show with him. And then we aired a different version of it on our air. If you don't make sure that brand is strong and relevant to a whole new younger audience, you're kind of dead in the water. So we're figuring out what that streaming strategy is moving forward. We have our TV Everywhere apps, Discovery Go, where people can go watch what they want, when they want. But we also just need to go to them on YouTube and on all of these other platforms where that's where they're getting most of their entertainment.
I think that what you're doing in terms of integrating him into a brand that's known so differently is really interesting and a great example of how to revitalize it for the next generation and make it relevant to them.
Well, great. Thank you. And he's one of many, but he's probably the one we've had the longest relationship with so far, and there's much more to come. So recently, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we did a big show around the launch of the SpaceX rocket. And we had been for Science Channel following for the past year, kind of documenting behind the scenes what was going on at SpaceX, what was going on at Boeing, working with NASA, as there was kind of this great race to see which would be the first privately owned company to launch man into space. And as they locked in on the launch date, we decided we need to cover this live. This is going to be a big moment. And we did. We covered it live across Science and Discovery, but we had guests on there like Mark Rober and Adam Savage from Mythbusters, including Mark Massimino, a former NASA astronaut, and other distinguished guests across the board, but he seamlessly blended into that live show and was amazing. And then on a whole other front, we actually partnered with TikTok and gave them our live feed, and we're airing the live launch on TikTok. And they were having some of their biggest live engagement they'd ever seen as well. And again, it's branded with Discovery and Science.
I think that's really interesting that you used TikTok in a way that's almost counter to what they're known for. You didn't do something short form with them. You did something live and a bit of a longer story format.
Yeah, that was a kind of a first for them, as far as I'm aware. I don't know in and out of everything, but I do know they were very happy with that. And, you know, the kids who weren't really turning on the TV to see what was going on, they'd go on TikTok and could see this thing was happening and were getting viewers live on TikTok. But as these big, you know, monumentous events come along that are appropriate and right for Discovery and Science to cover, yes, absolutely, we should be harnessing that on different platforms.
So the content is really front and center in drawing people to it. You are creating remarkably compelling content, capturing moments, and connecting with viewer passion with a lot of the examples that you've given us. But yes, in this vast landscape of content, how do you go about connecting with consumers? What does that relationship look like?
I don't know that I can adequately state how hard it is to launch a new show in this environment. And you can ask any of my competitors and they will say the same thing. There is so much noise out there. There is so much available everywhere. If you know there's going to be like-minded programming, that's what you have to use. And you have to keep super serving that audience. We've done a few different spin-offs of Gold Rush. Gold Rush is the number one show on Discovery. And we've found ways to expand it out with known people who had been on Gold Rush who were going off and doing their own thing. And that is just going to automatically bring in an audience. But to launch something fresh and new without any known faces, it's just almost impossible to break through. It's a really hard thing to do. And it's something we're in constant pursuit of.
Well, and it's interesting because, again, looking at some research that has come out of our ecosystem recently, clearly it tells us that because people are much more open-minded to experimenting and looking for new and different types of content now than what they may typically have opted to watch during the smaller viewing windows that they had in their lives. And so there's a tremendous opportunity for content providers to grab new eyeballs and build new passion with viewers who may or may never have watched their programming before. So talk a little bit about reaching the people who may not have known what to expect from your programming. And how do you try to get their attention and create some passion with them in this window of opportunity?
I think the biggest moment we've had to do that actually was coming out of the space launch live. We were live for three, if you remember, there was one day they were about to launch and they scrapped it 15 minutes before they were going to launch. And then they went back three days later and actually launched. We were live across those 2 days for 5 hours, more than anyone else covering that launch. And by the way, we broke records on Discovery and Science for the ratings that we were getting across those 2 days. So to me, I was thrilled about that, obviously, for the ratings, but we were also chock full of promos all throughout those 5 hours that were pushing to all of our programming. Like, we had all sorts of new eyeballs there that you don't usually have because they were there for that particular moment. And that was a huge opportunity for us to see a bump coming out of that.
Are you also using social media in a way to take that experience and try to feed it to people in small ways that grab them in the moment? And how do you do that across other platforms too? Break the strategy down for us a little bit.
Well, for different platforms, you have different strategies. Serengeti, which was a huge priority for us last summer, we loved it. and knew it was special and knew it was just something that everybody had to know about. Our strategy around that one was to use Shark Week as a launching point. Shark Week's another one of those moments on Discovery where you get all sorts of eyeballs coming to the network that don't usually come on a regular basis, but they love Shark Week and they'll come check it out. So when they come during Shark Week, we want to make sure they know the biggest thing that is happening on Discovery is Serengeti. And we're peppering the promos on that, the trailer for that was breathtaking, as was the whole series. So if you could get somebody to watch that and they have any sort of affinity for that kind of programming, they are going to watch. And then the social media strategy, you have a different kind of purview for Instagram versus Twitter. Every different one has a different way to approach it. Even on Facebook, we'd work to make specific spots about the characters that we created from the animals. If you watch Serengeti, they were given names. You were telling the story of them as a family. You were telling the story of the highs and lows of the drama. You would just find different ways to connect on the different platforms that I know. When I go to Twitter, I expect a certain kind of tone. When I go to Instagram, it's something completely different. When I go to TikTok, it's something different. When I go to Facebook, something completely different. You just have to have a really strong social media team that lives and breathes and understands those platforms and how to communicate with the people that are coming there.
I see research all the time that tells me how overwhelmed consumers are. And there's a stress level rising because there's so much high quality content now. No one person can possibly consume everything that they want to or that they'd really enjoy. There aren't enough hours in the day, even during quarantine. And so I think there's a different type of fight for eyeballs than there used to be. And I also wonder whether or not specific program brands are becoming more important than network brands. Because consumers are jumping here and there and everywhere to cherry pick the things that they really want to invest their time in.
I think it depends on the program and the show and what we know about the audience. Because we really want to make sure we're promoting the network brand. And as that is a place to come to, and that is where you will find the shows you like, because that's the future and that's the lifeblood. If you go to Netflix, for example, it is overwhelming. It's so overwhelming of where to go and what to look at. I mean, you can look at comedy, drama, or documentary, but it's when you can go and search by a brand. I know I like Discovery stuff. I'm in the mood for that kind of stuff. Or I know I like TLC stuff. I'm in the mood for that kind of stuff. It just helps you organize your time and what you want to invest in as a consumer. So to me, as we build out shows and have over the years built out successful shows, it's a matter of constantly driving home the fact that that is a Discovery show.
Let's just talk quickly about the programming and development. You've been known for a very full, aggressive pipeline. I'm sure some of that had to slow down with the pause on production. And you spoke about how you came up with Plan B type programming to keep that going and keep that alive when things go back to more of a normal pace. What do you see looking forward as the programming trends or the due north of where you're headed with the types of programming you're producing for your channels?
Well, right now we're focusing on escapist programming. There's a lot of bad news in the world. And you can get an endless supply of that from any source you want to go to. But I have found, even personally, I want a bit of escape at the end of the day. I want to kind of unwind with something. We look at Discovery as we bring the world to you. So how can we do that, especially when you can't go anywhere? How can we bring the world to you and also give you an escape from everything that's going on out there? And that, to me, I think is going to be the trend you see across programming over the next year or two, or definitely at least in what's under my purview. I think that's where the opportunity is. I think that's what people want and what people need.
Do you have concerns about all these shifts and trends and where they might pose challenges specifically to your businesses?
Yes. I would be crazy if I wasn't concerned. The pace has quickened. And I think the cable landscape got really big and bloated over the last 20 years. And now we're in a bit of a right-sizing of it. I don't think it's going away. I don't think it's going anywhere. But I think there's a bit of a right-sizing that is happening. And we're in the midst of that right now. We have to make the right decisions for the future of this brand right now. So that is the weight on my shoulders every single day. But it's almost freeing. Like you just iterate or die. And that's where we're at. We are iterating, iterating, iterating.
Well, and it's very clear that your passion and your experience and your talents are coming together at this critical time to take the challenges and turn them into opportunities. And thank you so much for sitting down and thinking out loud with us today and talking to us about it so that we can tap into some of your insights and experience to learn from them as well. It's really been a pleasure talking to you.
Well, thank you. And it's actually been kind of great to have one of those 30,000 foot view conversations. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.